Monday, September 7th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, anger over racial injustice as protests across the United States grew over the weekend.
I feel like this case was simply just a case of police brutality and racism.
Concerns over COVID-19 in Australia lead to lockdown extensions. Also ahead, the toll the pandemic is having on small businesses in one of the world's most visited cities. It's all on today's International Edition. Protesters in the city of Portland, Oregon, threw firebombs at police over the weekend, and at least one person was injured. On the 100th day of demonstrations in the city over racial injustice and police brutality, police described what they called tumultuous and violent conduct by protesters in the city's southeast Stark Street. Meanwhile, the video of a black man choking to death in police custody in the city of Rochester, New York, sparked renewed protests across the country against police brutality. VOA's Jason Patinkin has the story with reporting from the Associated Press.
I'm already in it.
Drag and kill me. And Jesus came at me.
That's what
my mother was like, why are you mad? No, God. I need it.
That's the sound of 41-year-old black man Daniel Prude choking in police custody in March of this year. It comes from a video showing Prude handcuffed by police with a bag over his head. Police had found Prude, who had been suffering from mental episodes, running naked through the streets. They put a hood over his head and pressed his face into the pavement until he stopped breathing, despite his pleas to stop. A medical examiner concluded that Prude's death was a homicide caused by, quote, complications of asphyxia in the setting of physical restraint, end quote. The report lists excited delirium and acute PCP intoxication as contributing factors. Prude's case did not receive widespread attention until this week, when his family obtained the video from police and released it to the public. Now, his name adds to the long list of black people who have been killed by American police officers. Prude's daughter, Tashira Prude, accuses police of covering up the real cause of her father's death.
I believe wholeheartedly that there was a cover-up, because if my father died March 30th, there's no reason why this story is just now hitting the media. I don't understand how anybody could say or feel like he was a threat to the police when he complied with all orders. I feel like this case was simply just a case of police brutality and racism.
Police have said they put the hood over Prude's head because he was spitting and vomiting, and they were afraid of contracting COVID-19. Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren said she saw the video on August 4th, but she didn't suspend the officers involved until a month later, after the video went public. The officers have not been arrested and continue to be paid. Warren accused the city's police chief of falsely portraying the death as a drug overdose.
Experiencing and ultimately dying from a drug overdose in police custody, as I was told by the chief, is entirely different than what I ultimately witnessed on the video provided to me by the law department on August 4th. What I saw in that video was a man who needed help. Our response to him was wrong.
A police internal affairs investigation in April cleared the officers involved of any wrongdoing. The report said that their, quote, actions and conduct displayed when dealing with Prude appear to be appropriate and consistent with their training, end quote. However, New York's attorney general on Saturday moved to form a grand jury to investigate Prude's death. Here's Rochester Police Chief LaRon Singletary.
First and foremost, I extend my condolences to the Prude family, and we want to make sure that Mr. Prude's death changes how we do policing in this city. Moving forward, we are dedicated to taking the necessary actions to prevent this from ever happening again.
Michael Mazzeo is the head of Rochester's police union, which calls itself the Locust Club. He called the mayor's statements irresponsible. Mazzeo also defended the officers involved in Prude's death, saying that they had followed their training.
Exactly what they were trained on, exactly what that training module is a step-by-step example right to the second on what these officers did on that scene.
But Mark Claxton, director of the Black Law Enforcement Alliance, said there needs to be a national standard for how police restrain suspects.
Well, quite clearly, there's a desperate need
for policing, for law enforcement community to establish a clear, concise, common sense national standards about the apprehension of individuals and the dangers and risks that come along with any kind of neck restraint, because too many individuals are dying. And let's be frank and honest about that. These individuals tend to be black and brown.
But Prude's daughter, Tashira, says police should not have been involved at all in her father's situation.
The people who were put on the streets to protect and serve did not protect and serve. When this incident occurred, my father should have been met with a mental health specialist. He should not have been killed in the street. He did not deserve that. He was treated like an animal.
Police have arrested at least 11 people during the protests in Rochester. With reporting from the Associated Press, I'm Jason Patinkin for VOA News in Washington.
President Donald Trump created controversy last week by appearing to urge his supporters to vote twice through mail and in person to test the election system and ensure their votes count. Voting more than once is illegal, and the president's comments have been slammed by critics, including Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswara has the story from Biden's home state of Delaware.
Trump supporters were energized during a rally in Wilmington, North Carolina, where President Donald Trump appeared to make a controversial suggestion to vote by mail and then go to a polling station and possibly vote again.
And if on election day or early voting that is not tabulated and counted, you go vote. And then if for some reason after that, it shouldn't take that long, it comes in, they're not going to be able to tabulate it because you will have voted. But you have to make sure your vote counts.
Trump, who has previously said voting by mail leads to voter fraud, reiterated his message via a series of tweets, which Twitter has labeled as violating its civic integrity policy for encouraging people to potentially vote twice. Voting more than once is illegal in the U.S. Most states are encouraging voting by mail as a safe and secure method during the pandemic. Trump's remark was condemned by critics, including Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden, who accused Trump of undermining the American election system.
I think it's all designed to create so much chaos that no matter what the outcome of the election is, that it's thrown up in the air. I mean, that must be his reason, because, I mean, he says and does things that no other president that I'm aware of in American history has ever done. And we all go, well, there's another ridiculous, illegal, inappropriate thing he said.
White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany defended Trump's statement.
The president wants enfranchisement, not disenfranchisement. That's his goal with the comments that he made.
But election officials and analysts are concerned about the potential impact on polling stations. Matthew Weil is the director of the Elections Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center.
I think what the president and what the press secretary are missing is the chaos that a significant number of people who have already cast their absentee ballots showing up at the polling place will mean, because the polling places themselves are not set up to handle, you know, a significant influx of provisional ballots. What it yields is a longer process for check-in, which means longer lines, and those individuals aren't going to get the information they wanted anyway.
Facebook said it would take down posts containing video of Trump's remarks on voting twice unless the posts correct the record about voter fraud. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News.
Meanwhile, over the weekend, Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris warned of suppression and interference that could alter the election. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris says foreign interference, doubt cast about the election by President Donald Trump, and voter suppression could potentially cost her and Joe Biden the presidency in November. The election is expected to lead to a massive surge in mail-in voting. Trump has repeatedly complained about the process, which he says, without offering proof, will lead to widespread voter fraud. In the meantime, U.S. intelligence agencies have concluded Russia is once again attempting to interfere in the election by adding to the discord in the country. Harris spoke on CNN's State of the Union. I'm Shelley Adler.
About 20 U.S. professional basketball teams will convert their venues into pandemic-safe voting centers for the 2020 presidential election. The move is part of a deal with the NBA players, who briefly halted their participation in the season-ending playoffs to protest racial injustice and police brutality. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports the latest arena to announce its plans is New York City's Barclays Center, home to the Brooklyn Nets.
Officials with the Barclays Center this week encouraged residents to come to the arena to cast their ballots in the November general election. John Abomandi is BSC Global CEO, a parent company of the Barclays Center.
We think it's very important, particularly during this pandemic, to provide the residents of the city with as many safe and open voting centers as possible. And so we were happy to work with government officials to make that happen.
City officials who appeared with Abomandi called for more owners and cities to offer their spacious arenas as sites where people can safely vote while observing social distancing recommendations. In late May, demonstrators gathered outside the Barclays Center Arena to protest the death of George Floyd in the custody of Minneapolis police. Eric Adams, Brooklyn Borough President.
It is crucial that all of our arenas throughout the country join the Barclays, join Madison Square Garden, and join other venues to say we will open our doors and ensure that people will be allowed to vote. This space is being transformed from a place where peaceful protests took place to a place where peaceful voting will continue.
The initiative was part of a deal negotiated with the players to end a boycott that shut down the NBA playoffs last week. The boycott spread quickly after the Milwaukee Bucks refused to take the court against the Orlando Magic in response to Jacob Blake's shooting in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Over the last few days in our home state of Wisconsin, we've seen the horrendous video of Jacob Blake being shot in the back 7 times by a police officer in Kenosha, and the additional shooting of protesters. Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action. So our focus today cannot be on basketball.
The unprecedented sport boycott in support of racial justice spread rapidly, shutting down almost all professional sports in America for several days. Several team owners supported their players, but not everyone was pleased. President Donald Trump tweeted, "People are tired of watching the highly political NBA. Basketball ratings are way down and they won't be coming back." In response to Trump's tweet, Milwaukee Bucks Kyle Korver said, "Life is not about ratings. Life is about standing for what is right." Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden expressed support for the Bucks players, saying in a tweet, "This moment demands moral leadership, and these players answered by standing up, speaking out, and using their platform for good." The season resumed after players, coaches, and league officials agreed on concrete action to promote voting and civic engagement and support police and criminal justice reform legislation. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The Universal Postal Union and the International Civil Aviation Organization are urging governments to provide postal, air cargo, and express mail operators with the money and flexibility necessary to meet the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Postal services depend upon passenger planes flying and delivering the mail to people around the world. The pandemic has upended this system. Many governments have grounded or seriously limited air travel to prevent the deadly coronavirus from spreading to their countries. This is causing delays in the delivery of the mail. Spokesman for the Universal Postal Union, David Dadge, tells VOA the Post has reacted by creating new shipping, trucking, and train routes to deal with this crisis.
What ICAO and UPU are actually saying is, if you want to return to the kind of quick deliveries that we were providing before, we need to get the system up and running again, and governments need to throw themselves behind the idea of trying to get things moving again.
Dutch denies that the viability of the international postal network is under threat from competition by private companies who have stepped in to pick up the lag.
But to be honest, and the figure is quite stark, the private companies are probably delivering around 70% of the parcels, and the postal operators around 30%. So, you know, in essence, the world is changing, and postal operators also need to move with the times.
Dadge says the industry has been changing its strategy quickly and dramatically to deliver the medical and humanitarian supplies needed to fight the pandemic. He says the post is no longer just about physical delivery of the mail. He notes many of the services it offers are conducted over the internet.
And I think what you will find from the pandemic is that this transformation and this movement to the digital, the movement to the internet, will be very much the way that the post defines itself as we go further into the 21st century. It's no longer about mail. It's more about parcels. It's more about financial services. It's more about business.
While private services offer stiff competition, Dadge says it is doubtful that they would wish to deliver the post to people living in isolated, remote areas. He says that would not be financially profitable. A unique feature of the universal postal system, he says, is the mail is delivered to everybody, rich and poor alike, all over the world, at a cost that is affordable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A strict coronavirus lockdown in the Australian city of Melbourne is being extended by 2 weeks. The Victoria state capital has been at the center of a second wave of infections. Authorities have said the restrictions will be eased in the months ahead if rates of new infections continue to fall. Australia has reported about 26,000 COVID-19 cases and more than 750 deaths. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Melbourne is living through Australia's toughest coronavirus lockdown. It was reimposed in July and is being extended because the number of new COVID-19 cases hasn't dropped enough. The lockdown will stay in place until the end of the month. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews is warning that without these strict measures, the state risks a third wave of infections. He says a cautious approach is the only way forward.
We can't run out of lockdown. We have to take steady and safe steps to find that COVID normal and make sure that in opening up, we can stay open.
There will be some minor relaxations to the regulations in Melbourne, a city of 5 million. A nighttime curfew will start an hour later. Playgrounds will reopen and more outdoor exercise will be allowed. Bigger changes will only come in the months ahead if the number of new daily COVID-19 cases continues to fall. Officials say if they drop to below 5 by October 26, the curfew would be ended. Outside Melbourne, the rest of Victoria State will have restrictions eased slightly more quickly. Dozens of people were arrested Saturday at anti-lockdown protests in Australia's major cities. The demonstrations were driven largely by fringe groups promoting virus-related conspiracy theories. Their actions have been described by the authorities as selfish. The Victoria government says obeying the restrictions is the only option to ultimately bringing the lockdown to an end. Victoria is at the centre of Australia's coronavirus crisis, accounting for three quarters of total infections and 90% of all fatalities. The pandemic and the closure of many businesses during lockdowns across the country has sent the Australian economy into recession for the first time since 1991. Unemployment is rising, and the authorities are warning that the recovery could take years. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Greece is beefing up land patrols to stem a rising tide of illegal migrants trickling in from neighboring Turkey. With tensions between the two NATO allies at their highest in years, Athens fears Ankara may move to weaponize refugees, sparking a fresh migration crisis on top of a lingering energy dispute. Anthi Karasava reports from Athens.
Greek authorities say they are mobilizing scores of special border guards to scour sprawling fields and marshland along the Evros region that divides Greece and Turkey. Hundreds more will be deployed on Greece's Aegean islands to stop illegal sea crossings. United Nations statistics show that illegal land entries into Greece from Turkey have doubled in the last month alone, stoking concerns of a new migration crisis as tensions between the feuding countries have flared over energy rights in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. Migration Minister Notis Mitarakis explains the Greek position.
Περιμένω από την Τουρκία να εφαρμόσει την κοινή δήλωση Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης Τουρκίας για τον περιορισμό των μεταναστευτικών ροών.
We want Turkey to conform to agreements it has signed to stem the flow of illegal immigration, he says. Any attempt to weaponize the suffering of refugees for geopolitical interests will not be tolerated, he added. Greece fended off a major migration push from Turkey earlier this year, after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan temporarily lifted his country's border controls, allowing refugees and migrants to make their way freely into Europe. Greece claims to have thwarted what it called an enemy invasion of hundreds of thousands of asylum seekers into the country earlier this year, and has kept its defenses on alert in the Evros region since then. The border reinforcement also comes amid a flurry of media reports saying that Turkey was withdrawing 40 tanks from Syria, moving them instead to the Greek-Turkish border. Turkey has not explained the deployment, but Kostas Lavdas, a professor of international relations at Pantheon University in Athens, says Greece must be ready for war. It may be a simple rotation of forces, he says, because Turkey has several military fronts open. Regardless the reason, he says, Turkey has repeatedly shown that it wants to be ready for all scenarios relating to Greece, including war. Greece, he says, may want to avoid that, but it also needs to be prepared for it. Relations between the two countries have deteriorated dangerously in the past month, as Turkey has sent an exploration ship near a cluster of Greek islands to hunt for undersea oil and gas in a patch of the eastern Mediterranean, which Athens says only it has the right to survey. Turkey rejects the claim, saying islands are not entitled to what is known as an exclusive economic zone. Ankara instead believes it has the right to explore the oil and mineral-rich East Mediterranean seabed after a recent maritime agreement it concluded with Libya. Erdogan has agreed to engage in talks with Greece to sort out decades-old differences over air and sea rights. But he said this weekend he would do anything to defend his country's interests.
Türkiye'nin kendisine dayatılan ahlaksız haritaları.
He said either Athens will heed to diplomacy or it will relive bitter memories of war. Greece has sought recourse with the United Nations, submitting what it called a bulky dossier of alleged violations by Turkey in recent weeks. The United Nations has made no response. Anthika Rasava for VOA News, Athens.
Police fired rounds of pepper balls at protesters in Hong Kong on Sunday as hundreds took to the streets to demonstrate against the one-year postponement of legislative elections and a new national security law imposed by China. In July, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam postponed the September 6th election for seats in the Asian Financial Hub's Legislative Council because of a spike in coronavirus cases. You're listening to International Edition. Back in a minute.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA's International Edition continues. About one-third of New York City's 240,000 small businesses may never reopen after the coronavirus pandemic is over, according to a report by the business group Partnership for New York City. Among them are small businesses owned by women. Nina Vishneva spoke with female entrepreneurs about their efforts to survive in this report, narrated by Anna Rice.
Maya Aquaviva hasn't been here since her restaurant was forced to close in March due to the pandemic. For over 7 years, this has been like a second home to her.
My grandmother used to call her home Oda Sakhli, Oda House, a wooden house in the mountains.
People would come here in search of just that, the feel and taste of home. Oda House was the first restaurant in Manhattan to introduce New Yorkers to Georgian cuisine.
No one believed a Georgian restaurant would be a success. People don't know where Georgia is, and you think your khachapuri, chakapuli, and hinkali will sell?
The restaurant had survived many challenges, but the pandemic proved to be too tough to handle. Though the landlord gave Aquaviva a rent discount, working only for takeout wasn't enough. Oda House had to close, like many other restaurants in the area.
On this block alone, there are 8 vacant spaces. Who would want to go into restaurant business these days?
Oda House is not alone. About 3,000 small family-owned businesses reportedly have been forced to close since March, when New York City shut down because of the pandemic. Small business owners hoped they would survive the financial blow. Despite relief from a federal stimulus package, many did not survive. According to New York labor figures, small businesses employ more than 3 million people, about half of the city's workforce.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
Bank Street, the oldest children's bookstore in New York City, shut down due to the pandemic.
We've always been the place where kids could come after school and sit and do their homework, where toddlers could come on a Saturday morning and sit all together on the floor mats and listen to a story, where classes could come in and with their teachers and learn about what a bookstore is and why books are important.
For several generations of New Yorkers, this was a favorite go-to bookstore. All these years, the business has been managed by women. Store managers say employees could no longer engage young readers to sell children's books.
Now we're finding that customers who are ordering books from us to be shipped are saying, we don't live in the city, we left in the beginning of this, and we're not coming back.
Lalita Kamut hopes she won't have to leave. After 3 decades selling perfume in her Manhattan store, she says demand has dropped since the pandemic began.
What happened is, you know, the sale is really went down 90%. And so far, no one coming in. It's only like maybe one person a day, and sometimes nobody.
Kamut says without help from the city, her store probably won't make it. Meanwhile, she's hoping a safe and reliable vaccine will come in time to save New Yorkers and businesses like hers. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, Anna Rice.
Billy Ocean is angry, but you won't hear it in his latest music release. He says he's frustrated by economic inequality and by black people being shot by police, and that he's fed up with hatred and thinks society is often going backward. Yet none of that frustration is visible in his new mix of soul, reggae, R&B, and pop infused with the warmth of Caribbean. It's the way the 70-year-old has always done it, from his 1984 hit Caribbean Queen to this new bright album, One World. The songs were crafted before the pandemic and summer of protests. Ocean says he feels they seem right for this moment in time. She wanted to take listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.